Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Fantasy Baseball Today starts right now. I am Chris Welsh. That is Scott White. Thank you for tuning in. And Andrew Heaney is a beast. We talked about him last week, Mr. Scott White. Andrew Heaney tallied a career-high 14 strikeouts over 8 innings on Tuesday, gave up 1 run against the Angels, got a win through 20 of 28 first-pitch strikes, only 63% owned in CBS. We talked him up. Now he's doing all the business, Scott.
Yeah, this was the upside we were talking about. Now, this was not the Rangers' A lineup he was facing. It was the first game of a doubleheader. But, you know, it had Willie Calhoun in it. It had Hunter Pence. It had some major league hitters in it, right?
Yeah, let's not get excited about Andrew Heaney. This is the guy.
Well, I'm just kind of responding to some of the feedback. There have been plenty of fake outs from Andrew Heaney in the past.
Sure.
Let's just say that. But to put it into context, 14 strikeouts, no walks in a start. The only other pitchers who've done that this year, they're all guys we consider best of the best among starting pitchers. Chris Sale, Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, Walker Buehler. I can't read my writing here. It's 6 guys basically of that ilk, though. And now Andrew Heaney is.
Do you have like that Dr. Scribble writing? The amount of times like my wife has given me a grocery list and she hasn't texted it to me, and I take it and I go, I don't know what jibber jabber is. Please text this to me. I don't know what you wrote. Do you have that type of writing?
Yes. There are times I cannot decipher my own writing.
What would you try to decipher?
It's Scherzer and Bieber.
Okay.
Those were the two names.
All right. Yeah. I was going to say, take a guess and a stab at what the deciphering, if you were decoding your own writing, that would be. How rest of the season comfortable are you with Andrew Heaney? I mean, that outing, to your point, it's not the A lineup. But there are positives with no walks, 20 of 28 first pitch strikes. I mean, he was really commanding the zone.
That's 22 swinging strikes. He has 3 games now, 3 starts, and he's only had 12 because he spent so much time on the IL. 3 of his 12 starts, 20 plus swinging strikes. Clayton Kershaw doesn't have a single start with 20 swinging strikes in it this year. So that kind of puts it in perspective. That's rare company that he's in. When you do that in a game, it's like among the best swinging strike totals for any pitcher all season. And he's done it 3 times, Heaney has. So, I mean, it was a 2-start week this week. This week was probably the time to pick him up and use him. So, obviously, that ship has sailed if you didn't do it. But, you know, everybody needs pitching help. And I don't know why you wouldn't act on this start. Unless you're just loaded at starting pitcher, and so few people are, I don't know why you wouldn't act on this start and pick him up.
Yeah, are you apprehensive at all? You sound a little apprehensive of like moving forward rest of season with him.
Because, like I said, this is his 3rd start with 20 plus swinging strikes. That means he had 2 earlier, and I probably got super excited about both of those. And obviously there are multiple years of this. There were times last year which, you know, last year was probably his best in the majors. He still had an ERA over 4. But, you know, he was probably rostered for most of the season. And he was somebody I liked to take another step forward this season. Now, injuries have prevented that from happening. But it's not over yet. There's 6 weeks to go. Maybe he has such a strong finish that he's one of the most buzzed about starting pitchers heading into draft season next year, a guy who, you know, is on everybody's breakouts list or whatever. I think he has that kind of potential. Obviously, I don't have a crystal ball, but among the pitchers who are owned in less than 70% of leagues, I don't think there's an obvious candidate to get more excited about than Heaney coming off this start.
Okay, let me do this then. I'm going to even jump down our show sheet notes here, and I've got a section of middle of the pack starting pitching, because I think this is important with Andrew Heaney, because this is the type of guy, if we're truly only sitting at a guy that's 63% owned, obviously people would be jumping to the wire after that start. Here's a couple of middle of the pack starters from Tuesday that went off and one who's higher owned that struggled a little bit. Steven Matz, who's 78% owned, went 6 1/3, gave up a earned run, struck out 7. Five of his last six quality starts he has. Five of his last six starts are quality starts, including a complete game shutout. He's got Atlanta. Couple more. Brad Keller, who's 73% owned. These are all players more owned than Andrew Haney. Went 6, didn't give up any runs, walked 2, struck out 4. He's got 8 straight games of 6 or more innings and 6 quality starts in that time. Michael Pineda, 80% owned, but only 50% started, which I thought was interesting. Did give up 4 on Tuesday, went 7, struck out 4. The first time in 7 games giving up more than 3 earned runs, and he's got 5 quality starts. And then the last one I throw to you, Aaron Sanchez, who is owned more than any of those guys, 83% owned, had kind of a dud, only went 2 1/3, gave up 3 earned runs, I believe, only struck out, what is it? He walked 2, struck out 1, and he only had 46 total pitches in the game. So I threw out a lot at you here. Those four pitchers compared to Andrew Haney, would you own Haney over any or all of those guys?
I think Haney has the most upside of this group. I am including Aaron Sanchez in that, who I think, you know, he fit the narrative so well of pitcher known to have talent goes to Houston, and oh my goodness, he throws a partial no-hitter his first start there, and the second start's decent too. And there were some small tweaks to his arsenal, but it wasn't anything major, and it's not like he was missing a ton more bats, and now his last two starts have been pretty much what we were used to seeing from Aaron Sanchez in Toronto. I'm not saying Houston can't figure out anything with him, but there's not clear enough evidence to me that they have. So he's not a big priority right now, Aaron Sanchez. Like I said, I think Haney has the most upside of this group. We're at a point now in the season where I don't know that selling out for upside is necessarily the right move. Depends on your situation, obviously. But if you're trying to lock up a playoff spot, or you know, you really need to preserve ratios, I think the safest of this group is Brad Keller, who, just by virtue of being an elite ground ball pitcher, and now that he's efficient again, he had walk issues earlier in the year, but those have not popped up recently, and I think now Keller has 5 of his last 7 have been quality starts. So I think Brad Keller is somebody who I would have a very hard time cutting loose, especially in a points league. I mean, points league, innings eater, you can start him at relief pitcher.
And I think you answered with Brad Keller where I was going to ask you is, let's say if we're saying the upside is with Haney here, because this is important, because also there's like a, there could be a 20% own percentage swing here from Aaron Sanchez to Andrew Haney. So he legit might be out there. So if people were out cutting Matz or Keller or Pineda or Sanchez to pick up Haney, what I was going to ask is, if any of those, if all 4 of those hit the wire, who's the guy you're picking up? Sounds like Keller is the one that you are jumping to pick up in the aftermath of the Haney pickup sweepstakes.
Yeah. Now, if it's for a bench spot, then I would go Haney. I might go Matz. Matz is one of those real pitchers who's hard to figure out, because the strikeout rate is usually decent, and yet sort of the other ways we would measure a pitcher's stuff, he doesn't rate very high at all, and yet he manages to get a decent number of strikeouts. So, you know, ultimately, isn't that what matters the most? Probably. I just never trust it fully that Matz is really, when he's going well, that he's really as good as he seems. But if I was just ranking all of these, just, you know, throwing all the other criteria out, just ranking them in terms of how much I'd want to roster them, and just kind of in a vacuum, I would probably say Keller, then Haney, then Matz, then Pineda, then Sanchez.
Okay, I like that rank. It is Worryometer Wednesday. Don't worry, everybody, I didn't forget. Speaking of Worryometer, I'm a little worried about something and meters here. I don't want to project by any means here, Scott. Our relationship is still building, of course. But I take you for a 76 to 78 degrees in your house temperature type of guy. Am I accurate on that?
Well, I live in South Florida.
Okay, so
I don't
like
know.
Me?
I don't know what the underlying assumption of that is. I think you're suggesting I'm frugal.
No, I actually, well, I'm, you know, that's a good point. Psychologically, that might be in there because thinking of the peeps in the sugar, I was kind of thinking that.
Sugar's so expensive.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, that's a good point. No, it's that meme that's going around, or this lady who was talking about the pure core temperature that houses should have. And it's just the wildest thing. We don't have to go on to a thing with it. But okay. You're kind of a skinnier guy. I'm a bigger guy. I looked at that and they said the median temperature a house should be is no less than 78 degrees. And I lost my mind because if it's over 75 degrees, I'm freaking out. I'm screaming. Well, I'm running around.
The reason I said I live in South Florida is, you know, when I haven't always lived here, of course. And when I lived in more temperate climates, I could probably do that with the thermostat. But the issue is when the air conditioner is not kicking in, the humidity is suffocating. So even it's less about even bringing the temperature down than just eliminating the moisture.
So you have to just keep it running.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. Yeah. So right, low 70s.
Oh, good. Okay. You know what? Go team us, because Arizona, Florida, we're running low 70s temperature. So that lady with her analytical research, go away. I don't want to hear it. I don't need to see any more of that stuff. Here's what's going on around baseball. It's the things that you guys care about. Corey Kluber with the Indians. He has got an oblique strain. He had a little bit of a setback in his rehab start. He is now at least out for 2 weeks. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks is what they said. So that already pushes us into September. I got to ask the tough question here, Scott. Do you drop Corey Kluber at this point?
Obviously, we're talking about a situation. Well, maybe not obviously. You may have other IL priorities, but obviously if there's a free IL spot, you stash him. Otherwise, it would depend on my needs. If it's Heaney or Keller, it doesn't matter who else it is. None of them have the potential to impact your roster the way Corey Kluber would. I suppose the only pitcher out there who might is Jesus Luzardo, himself coming back from an injury suffered on a rehab assignment. So that's been a recurring theme among quality pitchers. But like I think if it's only 2 weeks, Kluber shouldn't have to start the rehab from the beginning. You know, if he has to start the rehab from the beginning, that's it. He's probably done.
And I guess that's where I was going. I think I phrased the question maybe incorrectly to you. Is this isn't a sales situation where we know he's shut down. It's just he's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks.
Right.
That doesn't give any guarantee that he's back. So let's say he does need to go through a full stint because he just had a setback in a rehab. I don't see this as a 2 week thing. I actually start to look at this as at least 3.5 weeks where I would see Corey Kluber. So it becomes about juice being worth the squeeze. You know, if Andrew Heaney was out there, do you drop Kluber at this point? Especially, I mean, if you're in first place, you got the IL spot, you're first, second, third, whatever. You know the situations where you don't have to worry. But I think there's a lot of people out there that are genuinely being like, I don't know if Corey Kluber is someone I need to even hold anymore.
No, it's a reasonable question, and I'm not going to definitively say you're wrong if you drop him. Whenever possible, and I know this is kind of the opposite argument I was making for Keller, but whenever possible, when I have bench spots to play with, I want those spots filled with as much potential impact as I can get. And so if there's any percentage chance, if there's 25% chance Kluber could make, you know, 3 or 4 starts for me down the stretch, I'm going to hold out for that rather than take another flyer on Heaney. Now, that changes if Heaney goes and dominates at Houston next time out.
But probably not available anymore, though.
Understood. But if he performs at Houston like I expect him to perform, which is probably not going to be so great, then I won't be willing to start Heaney next week. And so then you're just talking another bench option like Kluber would be.
Okay, that's a fair enough point. It might be a little bit easier for Heaney because Astros manager AJ Hinch said that he is not optimistic that shortstop Carlos Correa will be able to avoid the 10-day IL. Carlos Correa, I think I've been saying it for the last year over on in this league, but Carlos Correa is the Giancarlo Stanton of shortstops. And maybe that's even giving him a little too much. The potential that we put on the guy is skyrocket high, but he just cannot stay healthy.
It's looking that way. And he's 24 years old. Crazy. Which is, you know, he's 5 years younger than Stanton. But to have back issues are the sort of things that can plague you for life. I mean, Kershaw 5 years into his, seems to have finally had a quiet year without them. Knock on wood. But, you know, they kind of sidetracked Todd Helton's career, ended what seemed like an obvious Hall of Fame track there. Yeah, you know, 24 is so young. Who knows? Who knows which way this is going to go? But shortstop has become so deep. Is Correa even going to be a top 10 option next year?
At the position?
Yeah, at the position.
Yeah,
yes.
I think that's a great question. I'm not sure he is, man. He will be drafted as such. He absolutely will be drafted as such.
I don't necessarily will, because you got... I'd have to pull up my shortstop rankings to get into it fully, but...
You got Turner, Lindor...
Mm-hmm. Bogarts,
Bregman, Mondesi, which that might be a little bit of a question. Points League, that's not really close, but... I don't know. I think he's still going to be... Tatis Jr., yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's at least six for sure, not counting Mondesi that we've done off the top of our head.
I'm going to pull it up because I think you'd be surprised who we're forgetting here.
Yeah, no, we're definitely forgetting like two guys right now that people are screaming.
So Ketel Marte and Javier Baez aren't going to be eligible there anymore. All right, so let's just start from the top.
Okay.
Alex Bregman, Xander Bogarts, Francisco Lindor, Trevor Story, Trey Turner, that's five.
Yep.
Who would definitely go ahead of him.
Forgot Story, that was a one.
Okay. Gleyber Torres.
That's six.
Maybe. Fernando Tatis, I think definitely.
Definitely.
And you mentioned Adalberto Mondesi, maybe in a categories league he would.
Okay.
And then probably the next highest is either Bo Bichette, maybe he's already in that discussion, or Jorge Polanco. So that might get to more where you lean toward Correa, but that's
at least seven if we were adding Mondesi in there. I mean, it pushes him down. We had this conversation last week, I think, too, Scott, where we were talking about maybe middle infield becoming the quarterback tier. You know, you tier up a bunch of guys and you take the cheapest cost. I don't think Correa is still going to be that. We still buy on the potential, even if Stanton comes back for 2 weeks and hits a couple homers in that time. Everyone's just going to have amnesia, and we're going to draft him at least two rounds more than we probably should, you know, without like baking in the concern. And I think that's the same thing with Correa, because we still do that. I saw just the other day someone putting out the per 162 of like 40 something homers with Correa, and they just you play those games and we give ourselves a false sense of security. I think I'm out. I'm out on paying high prices for Carlos Correa now. That's me.
Well, yeah, I mean, with Stanton, if we're going to further that comparison, I think there is a case to be made that he's showing signs of an age decline. I mean, just the combination of injuries this year itself is an indicator of that. And then just the way his strikeouts spiked in New York last year. But getting back to, I should mention that. I said Baez isn't going to be eligible. Javier Baez wouldn't be eligible at shortstop next year. He's not going to be eligible at second. Shortstop is pretty much the only position he's played this year. So that adds another to that list. Now Correa's really eight. Right there at 10.
You're not wrong. I mean, you're definitely in that camp. It's an interesting argument, but Carlos Correa most likely going to hit the IL. You can have some high hopes for September. Going through some of the other notes and injury stuff, Mike Trout set a career high with his 42nd homer in the first half of Tuesday's doubleheader against the Rangers. Just want to point that out. Mike Trout still doing the thing now. I think it was 300 and 400 something OBP. Robbie Ray threw a 35 pitch bullpen session on Tuesday, said he felt good. He was on the injured list as of August 15th with the back spasms. And so far this season, a 3.99 ERA, 187 strikeouts to 63 walks in 142 innings. So that would be positive. Austin Riley hoping to begin a rehab assignment this week. I don't think that has a whole lot of concern for us, but this one might. Chris Archer exited the start on Tuesday night against the Nationals due to right shoulder discomfort, Scott. Uh-oh.
Yeah, and I think it was coming just at a time when he was starting to look like you might be able to rely on him again, if only at the back end of your rotation. And we don't know the severity of it. Maybe they just skip him a turn or whatever. So I'm not sure. You know, I don't want to overreact.
Yeah.
Okay. I would probably drop him for Heaney.
Yes, I'm 100% with you. Ramon Laureano had a successful running session on Tuesday. Keep that if he's looming around the wire, especially if he comes back for September. Seattle catcher Tom Murphy started again and homered again against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay didn't start a left-hander, but used Jalen Beeks after the opener. And I believe Seattle also used an opener in that game, too. Two openers, and that was interesting. Enrique Hernandez and Chris Taylor are coming off the IL, but Alex Verdugo will not be back until after the September starts. September 1st, I think he's eligible. He will not be there. Domingo Santana is going on the IL with elbow inflammation. Some games in progress right now as we're recording. Colorado and the Diamondbacks, they are locked up 3-3 in the six as we're going. Nick Ahmed and Nolan Arenado have hit homers. Yankees and A's. A's are up 4-1. Definitely going to be looking if AJ Puck does anything. And then the Dodgers are up on the Blue Jays 5-2 in the fourth as we're recording this. Bo Bichette with a homer. Will Smith with another homer. Before we go to break, standouts. You got any Tuesday standouts that you want to hit?
So let's talk about the call-up news. Well, one of the two big call-up items. There's another one that I'm sure we'll get to later.
Yes.
But Nick Solak, called up by the Rangers, started both games of the doubleheader, first at DH, the second at second base. He went 1-for-3 in each of those games, homered in the second one. So that's a nice start to his career. He hit .289 with 27 homers and an .894 OPS between two stops. He was a AAA both times. He got traded midseason from the Rays to the Rangers, and actually that was his third organization. He began with the Yankees, so he's kind of been a hot potato prospect, but a prospect in, you know, not top 100, but just kind of outside of that group where there's some people who kind of question the ultimate ceiling, but the production's always been pretty nice for Solak. Always pretty good power, some good on-base skills. Speed has been there at times, though not so much this year. I wouldn't count on him in the major league environment running much. But, you know, considering Texas is going to be his home venue, if, you know, today's two starts is an indication he's going to play a lot, I think he becomes interesting in kind of maybe that, I always forget the guy's name, Van something for the Reds, kind of maybe on that level of...
Oh, Josh Van Meter?
Josh Van Meter, thank you.
Ah, we might talk about Josh Van Meter in a little bit. Okay, yes. In the Josh Van Meter realm. Yeah, and also somebody tweeted you and me, and people can do that. Is it the Welsh and Scott White, CBS Scott White?
At CBS Scott White, yeah.
At CBS Company Scott Man. White, that's right. I appreciate that. Somebody had tweeted us about Nick Solak asking, was he the 26 man? And that was not the case. It was actually Brock Burke, who we'll talk about in a little bit. He's immediately going to be optioned after his game. Nick Solak replaced Nomar Mazara, so he should be up for a little bit. He started at second in one of those games. Odor went to DH, so he's not a bad option. So I like that. Are you good on standouts, though?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's more show to come, but yeah. We'll save it.
Speaking of which, Worryometer is coming up. Let's take a little break here. We've got Worryometer. We will have more prospects. Bunch of other bombs in here, some deep league stuff, and even some of your emails. So let's hit that break and let's get to that Worryometer Wednesday.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Worryometer Wednesday. Am I doing it right, Scott? Does Azer have any other buildup for Worryometer Wednesday? Any sounders? Any things that
like nail biting sound effects or something?
Fingernails something on a chalkboard.
Man.
I like it. I love Worryometer Wednesday. You were the one that did want to kill Worryometer Wednesday when I came on. You did.
Well,
there's
just always so many meters, and I never know how to calibrate them. I never know if I'm being consistent in 1 meter reading to the next.
Okay. Well, in this show, no more thermometers, and we'll just stick with wariometers. We won't really do any other meters. We don't have to worry about that. But how about this? Josh Bell, wariometer, 2 for 20 with 3 walks and 3 Ks. He had that like little tiny thing that happened over a weekend. He started having some high exit velocity, was hitting the ball hard, had a couple homers, but you know what? The second half has been absolutely disgusting. So where are you at on the wariometer, Scott White, Josh Bell?
I will put that at about a 5, I think. I finally moved him down in my rankings just today. I had been confidently leaving him there at 3rd overall at first base for me. But first base, of course, is a deep position. And, you know, it was less about me saying Josh Bell, okay, clearly he's not good anymore, than saying, okay, but obviously Carlos Santana, Anthony Rizzo, who homered twice today, Pete Alonso, 40 homer season. All these guys are good too. And then you throw the first base eligible second baseman, Whit Merrifield and DJ LeMahieu, in there too. And suddenly Josh Bell is my number 8 first baseman. Mm. So still very high. I mean, my 8th first baseman would probably check into my top 40 players overall. But
Josh Bell or Joey Gallo in 2020?
I want to say Josh Bell, but he needs to show something over the final 6 weeks to justify that.
Yeah, I'm really worried about him. I'm going to put this at like a 6.5 if I can get into decimal points here, because like, I wasn't a believer coming into this year. Then he made such a big turnaround. Talked about a lot of, you know, how physically he was taking serious the offseason. He obviously made some changes, was hitting the ball way harder, was seeing the ball better. It looked real. And then it has just plummeted, fallen apart. 2-11 in the second half, only 4 homers in 32 games. I mean, the pacing is just atrocious. And at the end of the year, the tough thing, especially for people that haven't necessarily followed along enough, is that the stats are going to be misleading, especially if this continues. So to your point, he's got to show us something in the second half, but I'm going to say Joey Gallo, and I'm going to say a 6.5 on the wariometer. Nick Senzel, who is 79% owned in August, entering Tuesday, only hitting 197, 9 runs. He had 1 steal and 2 attempts, though I do believe he had 2 steals on Tuesday night. 18 yep. strikeouts, 2 doubles with a 530 OPS. Where are you at worry-wise on Nick Senzel?
Like, in terms of this season, probably about a 6 or 7. I'm not confident in him being anything more than maybe an injury fill-in for me. In terms of what it means for his long-term prognosis, his ability to meet all the prospect hype, I mean, I think it's way too early to make a judgment there. And he's done a lot of good things. I mean, he just isn't quite hitting the ball hard enough or elevating it enough to deliver on the power the way he'd need to stand out in this environment. But he hits the ball to all fields. The strikeout rate is certainly not high. And he's run more than I expected him to. 12 steals in half a season worth of games. It's
pretty nice. I've seen a lot of Nick Senzel. I mentioned this before, you know, the Reds complex. I live 10, 15 minutes away from it. So I've gotten to see him, you know, out in spring training, working with Taylor Trammell at the time in the outfield. Super talented, hits the ball hard. I'd also say there's probably a prospect fatigue in here, because I think he's a very prototypical type of hitter. I think there's a 2015-ness in him with a high batting average. But this is also the most games he's ever played since being a pro, since 2016. He's up to 87 total games.
So you mean literal fatigue?
Like, yeah, I'm saying like...
Not we're tired of him, but he's tired.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think I made that up there, actually. It looks like he played, I just about made that up, 119 games in 2017. He's about 20 games away from that. So when he finishes the season, he'll be into that. But I think there is a literal fatigue that's going on right now with Nick Senzel. And hopefully it's going to turn around. I love him as a bounce back next year. But as far as this year goes, I would say we're probably, what did you say, 6 or 7? I'm at a 7.
I kind of hedged and said 6 or 7. Yeah. Okay.
6.5 then. You can do decimal points here. I'll allow it. Malik Smith back in the leadoff spot tonight, post All-Star break, entering Tuesday, hitting 230 with only 13 runs, 11 steals in 15 attempts. a 618 OPS, got five doubles and three triples. Malik Smith, worryometer, where are we at?
Probably like a seven, especially now that they called up a potential alternative to Malik Smith in center field.
We are going to talk about him.
Yes. And that's not even the other prospect news I was referring to.
There's so much.
And he, of course, being
Jake Fraley.
Thank you.
Of course, Jake. We're going to talk about
you. I come up with that name.
Yeah, well, we could talk about him right now.
I was hoping you'd bail me out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you were like, there's kind of like a cool tension that was going on. Like, I didn't know if it was a lead up, but no. Jake Fraley, very big on, hit 298 with a 365 OBP, 19 homers and 22 stolen bases with the Mariners. I believe it's across two levels. He really dominated Double A. Triple A, he hit a little bit of a wall, but this dude has got some huge power to go along with his big old beard. I saw him just absolutely demolish one at the Mariners complex out here during spring training. There is big power. A lot of people got mixed up with him because they assumed they saw like him hitting 320 or whatever it was at Double A. And then when he came down and was about a 270 hitter in Triple A, people started to panic. This is a guy, I think, that's like a 275 2020 type of a player, maybe even like think Mitch Haniger type of stats. I'm very much into Jake Fraley. I think he's a major pickup right now. And to your point, that's why I wouldn't be, I am worried about Malik Smith. I think I agree with you. I'm at a seven.
Well, and a good defender Fraley is, speed was one of the, even more than the tool, even more than the power, the speed was a tool he was known for coming into this year. And then he's kind of had a nice big power surge this year. So he's interesting. And I don't think Malik Smith is necessarily, he was great last year, but his skill set isn't a great fit in today's environment. And if he's not hitting 290, he's not really doing anything offensively. And he's far from hitting 290 now.
Yeah. And this also could not even necessarily lead to Malik Smith maybe even completely losing time. It could just push him in the order as well. If you push Malik down to the bottom of the order.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not like the Mariners have a deep lineup.
Yeah, but it's also not like Malik Smith is super exciting in the first place. You're just super chasing stolen bases.
He's just steals. Yeah,
and
steals. If you need steals, he's useful. If you don't, he's not.
I'd almost rather have Rojas with the Diamondbacks than Malik Smith at this point, even though he wasn't playing tonight.
It just depends if you need steals.
Sure.
That's the angle I should have taken in the first place.
I like it. All right, last one on the worryometer here. Matt Carpenter, 76% own. He sat versus a lefty on Tuesday night, hitting 215 with 11 homers, 51 walks, 101 strikeouts, 14 doubles, 2 triples in 95 games, 14 games since coming off the IL, only 214 with a 679 OPS. Worryometer, Matt Carpenter.
10.
Ooh.
I don't go 10 very often, but guy in his mid-30s, shown us nothing all year, has been an underachiever for a long time, outside of the middle 4 months of last year. We're talking about 4 years running where you look at the underlying stats and, okay, he should be better. But now, I think it's too late. I think it's too late to expect a big turnaround from Carpenter. And I mean that not just from a this year perspective, but I don't see any reason to value him highly going into next year with all the emerging infield options, especially at third base. At third base, like, I am totally buying into Gio Urshela, and I can't get him in my top 20 in my rest of season rankings at third base. That's how deep that position is. So Carpenter, no chance.
I think I'm with you. How often this season have you given a 10, by the way? Would you just estimate?
I think that might be the first one.
Really?
Wow. On the worryometer?
Okay. There we
go. I
don't
like the worry.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's almost beyond worry at this point. It's just, it's the whatever-o-meter. Whatever-o-meter. That's where we're at with him, because I agree. 9-10. He just, I don't see how he's 76% owned outside of name value at this point. You with me?
Yeah, he's done nothing to deserve a lineup spot. I mean, he still walks at a good rate, but he's hit so poorly, it's the 324 on base percentage, so who cares?
All right, there you go. A little worryometer Wednesday for you guys. Prospects, assemble! We had Jake Fraley. We had Nick Solak. The other one you probably were referring to, Justus Sheffield, is on his way.
That's the guy.
You've been calling it. 33 and a third inning, 32 strikeouts, 9 walks with a 1.89 ERA in July. This is at AA. 24 and two-thirds with 29 strikeouts, 5 walks. That was a 3.2 ERA in August. All in AA for Justus Sheffield because he was demoted from AAA. He's done pretty solid. He's found himself. He is going to be jumping in and starting on Friday as the Mariners are skipping Yusei Kikuchi. And they're going to push him back to next week. So you have been leading the Justus Sheffield train here. So what do you got?
And it's funny because I was I was kind of alone among people who spend any time evaluating prospects in really not liking Sheffield at all. I mean, he was in my preseason top 100 because I kind of felt like he had to be, but I was purposely trying to push him down. And kind of felt like he was ultimately going to wind up in a relief role because small and didn't seem to have a full enough arsenal and major efficiency issues. And this stint at AA, this 12-start stint at AA, just all of that went away. It was the best he's ever pitched.
But like, okay, just let me throw a couple things in there. I think where a lot of people got excited, and this would be me included, would be, I saw Justus Sheffield. He was out here in the Arizona Fall League in 2017. And I remember I was at Scottsdale Stadium. He was starting. I think it was his first start. Maybe it was a little bit after. I don't know. It was the first start I saw him pitch. He went 5 innings. I think he gave up 1 hit, struck out 8. Keith Law dropped after the game. He's like, this is the best I've ever seen Justus Sheffield. He looked like he was top command, big stuff. It looked like he was throwing 3 pitches. He was commanding all of them against some of the top competition, and that got people excited. But take away that if you want to evaluate, like, why are other people in on him? I'm more concerned that he failed so miserably in AAA and had to be demoted. Like, the being really good at AA doesn't get me super jacked up because he's at an even lower level, and, you know, the baseballs are actually physically different at AAA and AA, so I don't know. I've actually got more worry than anything with him.
I think it's
was it confidence?
No, I think it's AAA. I specifically the PCL. You look at pitching numbers in the PCL, which was already far and away. I mean, it was basically it in the California League on their own in terms of inflating pitcher stats and in terms of favoring hitters. And then you put the juiced ball there. Like, pitchers don't stand a chance there. That's part of what made Zach Gallen so exciting is, he was such an outlier in terms of how he was dominating in that league. But most other pitchers, highly regarded prospects, I mean, they're getting pummeled there. So
you're not wrong about the
PCL.
You know, you are right. The PCL in general is definitely an environment where you have to take, as you would take like the Cal League with hitting or the hitting stats in AAA, you have to take it with a little bit of a grain of salt because they're going to get hit up. But I don't know, like a guy at this age going down to AA, I mean, you want to speculate, but ultimately at the end of the day, I want to hone back in here because we're kind of talking about how you kind of thought he was on the reliever run. Then he fixes himself in AA.
Yeah,
he's now getting his opportunity. Are you're all back in that he's a starter for at least the rest of the year?
Well, I don't know if he's going to have the innings to make the rest of the year. He's at a career high right now. But I'm more optimistic about his chances of being a quality major league starting pitcher than I've ever been before. And given the state of starting pitching in baseball right now, that means I'm, of course, making a move to add him.
Okay. Okay, that's good. We kind of went all over. I took us in all different places with Justus Sheffield, but we got back to the core issue here, which, you know, he did fix himself in AA. I say there's a little bit of cautiousness you have to be there, but there's probably not, you know, too many starts, you know, that you're going to be battling anyways. This is probably a guy that looks a little bit better in points leagues than maybe anywhere else. Am I wrong about that? Do you think you like him in the other formats, or is this a points league guy?
The control was there at AA this year. Now, if we're taking the entirety of his minor league career, he's a bad control pitcher who'll probably hurt you at WHIP. And just by the fact, virtue of pitching for the Mariners, he's probably not going. I mean, who knows? Wins are so random over a small sample, but the odds are against him being a winner. But I think he could be an overpowering pitcher, and that's something I want in any format.
Okay. AJ Puck, I know you guys talked about this yesterday. I was hoping we might get a little bit of action on him because he is officially on the roster right now. No look at him. But at the same time, it's also most likely in relief. Don't think they're going to put him on the back end. That doesn't matter. Randy Arozarena was optioned. Tyler O'Neill is back. Only 10% owned. I'm sorry, Harrison Bader. I screwed that up. Harrison Bader batted eighth, hit a triple, 1-for-1, 2 runs, and 3 walks. Interesting.
Yes. Okay, that sounds more familiar. Not really. I think if Harrison Bader wasn't the defensive standout he is, the Cardinals might have already kind of phased him out. Just not enough really to get excited about there offensively.
Okay. Last one on our prospects assemble, Brock Burke, who came up only 4% owned. He went 6, gave up 4 hits, no earned runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts, had a 3.9 ERA and 13 starts in the minors, 64 strikeouts, 18 walks. That is between 4 levels, by the way, through the Texas Rangers, former Tampa Bay prospect. And he got that spot start, looked pretty solid. Anything on Brock Burke?
Yeah, he looked okay. It wasn't really a start that in isolation gets me excited, and the minor league numbers are less than great. They're solid. But I need to see more and you know, the fact he's probably getting sent down right after this start, you know, there's no reason to pursue Brock Burke.
Yeah. And he was the, and as I mentioned before, he was the guy that was set up to be the, he was set up to be the 26th man. So maybe he gets another spot start. You can monitor. Good to see that he was positive in the spot start, but you can keep going with that. Nothing really to fully update you on outside of the Diamondbacks in the games in progress. By the way, Diamondbacks are now up 8-3 on the Rockies, and Clayton Kershaw, it looks like he's going to be in line for a win as Sean Reed Foley was getting rocked 8-2 Dodgers over the Blue Jays. So Clayton Kershaw continues to look good. Nick Ahmed, who actually we're going to talk about here in just a minute. So let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll go through a bunch of hitters. We'll go through some pitchers, and we will try to get to a couple of your emails. Fantasy Baseball Today.
Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
All right, Scott White, undervalued hitters. I have got 4 for you. You tell me where you go with this. Who is the undervalued guy and who is the must own? Willie Calhoun, only 65% owned in CBS. Hit his 12th homer. He's got hits in 7 of his last 9 games. 5th homer in August. JD Davis, your boy. I saw you have to tell somebody to drop JD Davis on Twitter, and I felt like that hurt you a little bit, like deep down in your soul. So I felt bad.
It did.
Yeah, okay. 56% owned. He hit his 15th homer. Coming into Tuesday, he was hitting .377 in August. In the month of August, Ahmed Rosario, 16 hits in his last 6 games, 65% owned, and Nick Ahmed, only 56% owned, tied for the least owned here, hit his 17th homer on Tuesday, 4th home run in his last 7 days. So who is truly undervalued of this group of 4?
Well, it's really who isn't, and I think it's Ahmed Rosario, whose status is elevated right now because he's batting leadoff for the Mets. That shouldn't be for long. McNeil's IL stay figures to be a short one, and it's mostly singles. Like, and every time Rosario's been showing us something in the past, it's been singles that have carried them, and singles aren't something that are to be relied upon for long, not to mention they're just not that valuable in and of themselves. So, you know, I kind of answered the opposite of your question. I mean, if the most undervalued to me is JD Davis. I've been over it several times. I mean, his season-long numbers are awesome, and the XBA, the XWOBA, they both suggest he's even better than that. So, I mean, the kind of contact he's making is, first rate. But I like all the other three, even Ahmed. I just want to, and I've found a way to talk about all of them, which is not what we want to do. But even Ahmed, I just want to point out, he's the number 13 shortstop in points leagues this year. Number 13, a little lower in Roto. I think he's like 17th in Roto, but still, I mean, that's a guy who just isn't getting credit for the kind of year he's having. And a lot of that has to do with staying healthy on a per game basis. I'm sure he'd be lower, but regardless, 13th at what's regarded as a deep position is pretty good.
Who to own? Kyle Seager, 48% owned, hit his 17th homer. He's now got six home runs since August 13th. Jason, a.k.a. Joe Kipnis, 42% owned, hit his 13th August, coming into Tuesday, hitting 274 and hit his fourth home run in the month of August. So who to own, Kyle Seager or Jason Joe Kipnis?
I have a much greater need for Kipnis. I feel like the kind of streak Kipnis is on, basically since mid-June, he's been a 900 OPS guy, and I see more reason to buy into it than this latest power binge for Seager. And plus, nobody's needs at third base. Nobody has a need at third base, like I pointed out earlier. It's just so deep.
Yeah. Deeper options. Are these guys even somebody in the deepest of leagues you're looking to pick up? Josh Naylor, who, Josh Naylor, only 6% owned, but he did hit his seventh home run and is getting some starts in San Diego. And we talked about Josh Van Meter, only 24% owned. Hits in 10 of his last 12 games. He also stole his fifth bag. So, you know, 16-team leagues. Are you flying in either one of these guys, or is it a move on?
I Van Meter in a deep league, he's basically the primary first baseman now with Votto on the IL. And, you know, still hasn't been playing much against lefties, but I think that could change if he gets hot enough.
Okay. Let's talk about this guy, Tim Anderson. 2-for-3 with a homer and a double against Minnesota, hitting .331 with 16 steals and 20 attempts. Previous 20 game sims coming off the IL, .369. I believe that's five homers in there, a steal, .886 OPS, but a .435 BABIP. Is Tim Anderson the real deal? Well, I mean, this is kind of a going into next year conversation, but he's kind of, you know, a little bit of injury, but just an awesome start to the year. We talked about, you know, we talked about shortstops with Carlos Correa and everything like that. Where is Tim Anderson on the Believo-meter?
Oh, he's probably about a three. Like you mentioned the BABIP there. For the season, the BABIP is right around 400. The injury kind of prevented it. You know, he missed so much time with the injury. And I guess he deserves credit for coming back just as hot, but it's kind of prevented that number from normalizing. And the fact he's just stolen only one base in 20 games since returning, I mean, that's the main thing I want from Tim Anderson, because I don't think he really has the potential to be a 300 hitter.
If I were to ask you 2020 Tim Anderson versus Bo Bichette, it's as easily Bo Bichette for you, right?
Easily.
Okay. Easy, easy. All right. Some double dongs on Tuesday. Freddie Freeman hit his 32nd and 33rd. Anthony Rizzo hit his 24th and 25th, just strengthening the position that we know. How about some middle of the pack pitchers here? I think we talked about, we already talked about those guys, so we don't have to do that. How about we don't do it? How about we go to fringy pitchers? Two of them for you. Cal Quantrill. I feel like we've talked about him so much since I've been on here, but 58% owned, went six, gave up three, struck out nine. He's got seven straight games going at least five and not giving up more than three earned runs. He also tied his career high in strikeouts with those nine versus a guy like Reynaldo Lopez, who went six, gave up six hits, three earned runs, no walks, three strikeouts. The team ended up, you know, getting rocked a little bit after, but he's got Texas and Atlanta his next two starts. So, fringy-ish starting pitchers, Cal Quantrill or Reynaldo Lopez?
I would lean Quantrill right now, partly because he hasn't had the chances to let us down the way Lopez has over the years. You know, Lopez had a nice little stretch there right after the All-Star break where he was throwing harder and seemed like the strikeouts were picking up, but they're back down. Quantrill, the strikeouts haven't been great either, but, you know, if he has more starts like this one, then we'll have to start paying attention. Nine strikeouts, 13 swinging strikes is a decent number. Okay, I'll keep an eye on him.
Okay. Some deeper league guys. Dylan Bundy went seven, only 30% owned in CBS right now. Went seven, gave up five hits, one earned run, walked two, struck out seven. Does have a five ERA. He's got Tampa Bay this week and Kansas City next week. Your guy, Eliezer Hernandez, only went four. Three hits.
Blister. And left with the blister.
Left with the blister. Gave up one earned run, five strikeouts. And I'm even going to throw this guy in here. Alex Young with the Arizona Diamondbacks, 43% owned, a little bit more than deeper. Went six, gave up three earned runs, struck out four in Tuesday's outing against the Colorado Rockies. Deeper leagues, where are you at on these three guys?
I would say Hernandez is probably still my favorite. I hate that he pitches for the Marlins because there are going to be issues with wins there. And I don't know. I mean, maybe this blister issue puts him on the IL.
Also significantly lower owned than any. I mean, 30% by Bundy, 43% for Alex Young, and only 11% for Hernandez.
Yeah. I mean, and that was true in his previous stint in the rotation when he was pitching even better. It's been up and down his return to the rotation, but I don't know. I'm kind of interested in him. I don't think he's must own or anything like that. Bundy, like I still think we have yet to see the best of Dylan Bundy in the majors, but this season is a lost cause.
Yeah, as soon as he's not an Oriole, that's when we'll see the best of Dylan Bundy. That's what I believe. Well, like
maybe
most of those
Jake Arrieta situation.
Yeah, or any of them, for sure. A little bit of rotation here. A bunch of the guys that you guys know and you own and you start pretty much every starting out here. But Strasburg went seven, didn't give up an earned run, struck out six. Sonny Gray went six, gave up one earned run, three walks, 10 strikeouts, which is the second straight game with 10 strikeouts. And he gave up his first earned run since July, Scott. Sonny Gray, I mean, has anybody in the second half improved their stock for 2020 than Sonny Gray, or is it something that still is just unbelievable?
No, I'm glad you brought it up. I actually did every quarter of the season. I do a dynasty update where I give the five biggest risers, the five fallers, the five prospects who've improved their stock the most as well. So 15 players total I write about who've seen a change in value in dynasty leagues. And Sonny Gray was among the five risers this year, still only 29 years old. I mean, pitchers can pitch into their mid-30s.
Feels like he's like 35.
Yeah. And he's, I think he's kind of, you know, his unfortunate experience in New York where they had him kind of emphasize his breaking ball beyond a level he was comfortable. I mean, it's a good breaking ball, so you understand why they did it. But now he's back to leading with the fastball, kind of has those ground ball specialist mentality, and that's kind of what he was in Oakland. But he's able, when he gets ahead of the count, to put hitters away now with that breaking ball, and it's just kind of made the best of, it's the best of both worlds now. It's a very good pitcher.
And it's interesting too, because he kind of, you know, over the last second, or really the second half of the season, been better than any of the guys we're kind of talking about. Strasburg has been solid. Aaron Nola's been a little up and down. He went seven, gave up two earned runs, walked one, struck out seven. Shane Bieber went six, gave up two earned runs, walked one, also struck out seven. Wish Azer was here, because Dallas Keuchel, who's 95% owned. What's up, everybody? Six innings. He gave up two earned, walked two, and struck out seven. And Cole Hamels, this one's a little bit more important, 96% owned. He had a rebound game. His last two starts, he had combined to go five innings, gave up 12 earned runs. But in this one, he went six, gave up three, walked two, and struck out five. So we're a little bit back to comfortable with Cole Hamels, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I wasn't reading too much into the two awful starts, except that they were soon after him. He was returning from the IL, and that's always kind of a makes for a sticky situation. But, you know, I'm encouraged by the start, definitely.
I was talking, I don't want to go on a tangent here because we're getting towards the end of the show, but Scott Bogman and I were talking this week over an ITL about, like, I want to know what's going on with the pitching coaches, or what's happening in Chicago with the rebounds you're seeing of, like, I mean, look at Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish is coming back to elite status. Cole Hamels this year has been fantastic, except as of recent. Jose Quintana seems to be turning it around. I just wonder if there was, is there something that altered with all of these guys? Like, if it was one guy, okay, but it seems like a lot of guys have found some type of alteration that has made them kind of all, I don't know if they're all returned to form. But are you with me on that? Like, I know you, Jose Quintana, you guys aren't true believers in, but I know you're kind of back with Darvish. I just feel like there's something in the water over there right now that's cooking for pitchers.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a coaching thing or not. It may be. I don't know much about the Cubs pitching coach, to be honest. So, you know, he was just hired this offseason. So I don't know much about him. Thomas, do you know how to pronounce the name even? I don't even know that. I was born in 1981. My gosh, he could be my older brother.
Oh, my gosh. He's 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. Really, you reflect on your life when you go that. I don't know. I want to dig deeper. I want to pick around, and maybe we'll come back to that, because it seems like there's been a resurgence with Cubs pitching as of late. Maybe that's just
me. There has. I mean, you've spelled it out nicely. All of those guys are kind of rounding into form, and Kyle Hendricks has had kind of a resurgent season overall. He's been low key one of the the ace of the staff, really.
Yeah. By the way, little update, as you said, no doubt Bo Bichette, double dong, two homers in this game.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so beautiful.
Bobo.
So, seventh home run. Dodgers are still up, and as we're recording this, it's the top of the sixth. Clayton Kershaw looks like he's still in line. He's still pitching and still in line for a quality start in the win, but a little bit of Bobo in there. All right, let's finish off with just a couple emails. You down?
Yeah.
Okay. Moshe from Brooklyn? Moshe? I don't know. Dear Pete, Fernando, Mike, and Alex. What would that be? Pete, Fernando, Mike, and Alex?
Ooh.
People with first names on the New York Mets?
I don't know. I feel like there's a connection. Like, I feel like I almost know it. I'm going to try Googling
okay.
it here.
Okay, I'm going to read the rest of this. I love the show, and while I miss Adam, Chris has been doing a great job. Well, thank you. However, unless I missed it, we have not gotten Chris's take on two very important topics, and it is a must. Number one, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? Oh, man. Why are you doing this to me? I'm going to say it's not. I mean, it's set...
Oh, this is the right podcast for you, sir.
It's set in a Christmas setting, but it is not a Christmas movie. It is an action movie. If I go onto Netflix and I go under a Christmas section, Die Hard will not be there. It will be under the action category. So, no, sir. It is not a Christmas movie. Number two is...
That's the right take.
Okay, good. We're all on it.
At least Adam and I would think so. I'm not sure any of the others who you haven't podcasted with yet would, but...
What about... Is anybody else's Towers? Is he action or Christmas?
I think he would say it's Christmas.
That sounds
right. I know Heath Cummings would definitely say it's Christmas, but they are wrong.
Number two, is Butterfinger a great candy, an awful one, or somewhere in between? Oh, I feel like this is a big test. I got to tell you, it's pretty dang good candy.
Yeah!
I'm not a chocolate guy. I'm not a big chocolate guy. Not saying I won't eat chocolate. If you've ever physically seen me, you would think that's a guy that eats chocolate. I'm more of a sour guy, though. I love Sour Patch Kids. I'll give me those like really hard Warheads. I love sour. So that's my
jam.
Yeah,
those like burn your tongue. They're so sour.
Yeah. Well, I got like weird too.
I like both chocolate and sour. How do you like that?
Oh, is there a chocolate sour item out there? Is there someone that does that?
That doesn't sound like a pleasant mix.
I mean, I don't know. I'm willing to try. But yes, no, Butterfinger. Who doesn't think Butterfinger's a good candy?
A lot of people don't. I don't think Adam does. I'm not sure. I definitely do. Like every Halloween, that's like my go-to when I'm digging through the kids' candies. Like, give me the Butterfingers.
Oh, yeah. That's like top
three. Some people don't like the way it sticks in your teeth.
But I mean, it's fine by me. You know what? You're right. Because Adam's...
I don't even necessarily dislike that.
Adam forwarded this to me, and he's like, the answer to both of these better be no. And I was like, well, one is no. So there you go. I dig a Butterfinger.
By the way, Pete, Fernando, Mike, Alex, probably the leading contenders for NL Rookie of the Year. Alonzo, Tatis, Mike Soroka, and Alex Verdugo.
Oh, that's a good one. How did you pull that?
You're a Googled smart their
man.
Name.
Well, because you're Scott White. You're a smart man. Okay. You Googled their name. What an idiot. I'm like, how'd you do that? You're like, well, I use this computer and the internet. It's great. Jonathan says, good morning or evening. Quick question, with the rosters expanding soon, who are some notable names to stash to help for the fantasy baseball playoffs? Hitters or starting pitchers? He's in a 12-team 5x5 standard categories league. I mean, that's a loaded question, if you will, with September call-ups, because I feel like some of the names we would want to say, like a guy like Gavin Lux. Gavin Lux hit his 25th homer on Tuesday night, by the way, 14th, I believe, in AAA. He's a madman. I'm going to give you a reverse piece of advice real quick, and then we'll get Scott's take if you're looking for prospects. My reverse piece of advice is watch what's going on with the Arizona Fall League right now. They're doing this weird bit where every day they're releasing like a player, a big star player on each team. Royce Lewis was on Monday. Joey Bart was on Tuesday. I think you might see a guy like Gavin Lux actually show up on that list, which would take him off of the prospects that you wouldn't see. I think Joe Adell would be another one. So that might be a little bit of a head. But what do you think? Do you got a couple guys that you're stashing with rosters expanding?
Wait, so you're saying if he's announced for the Arizona Fall League, he's not going to come up?
Yes.
In September?
Yeah, oh, he might come up, but I don't think he plays much of anything.
Hmm.
And he would be gone by September 18th. Because September 18th, yeah, well, actually the 16th for practices. Arizona Fall League starts September
18th. I mean, couldn't they just announce him and then say, never mind?
Absolutely. You know what? Absolutely. It could happen with Victor Robles, but they've also been so apprehensive. I think at all, I think if you see the announcement, it's because they've made the commitment. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but Gavin Lux is the type of player that they would do during the release of the Fall League rosters, and the full rosters will be released, I believe, on Sunday. So be on the lookout for that.
The only prospects I think of great note who I think are may intentionally be being held back till September are Kyle Tucker and Lux, who could, when I say of great note, both they have the kind of upside you're looking for, and I think they could emerge as full timers legitimately in September. Most September call ups are there just to help out, and they're usually not the most exciting names.
Agreed.
So I think it's an overrated well to try and tap, I guess.
Carter Kieboom would be another one. I'd say go back up and pick up Carter Kieboom because I think he's a stud and there's no reason he shouldn't be back up getting a little bit of a run. All right, two more quick ones. This is Adam from Toronto. Who is a better pitcher to own this season, Luzardo or Pablo Lopez, points league? Thank you.
Definitely going to aim for the upside of Luzardo, though Pablo Lopez is, I think, a pretty good option.
1,000% agree. That's an easy one. Last one, Dan, dear Chris, Adam, Scott, and Heath Sy. I don't have the sound effect, so I can't play it. I'm in a little bit of a pickle in my situation with closers. 12-team points league. I'm trying to lock up a first or second seed and we'll get the bye. What is he saying? I'm trying to lock up by first and second seeds, which will get a bye. I think he's just trying to get one of those. I'm in second with 2 weeks left until the playoffs. Would you drop any of these closers for Emilio Pagan? The closers to drop are Felipe Vasquez, Edwin Diaz, or Ken Giles. He says all these guys had good first halves, but have been non-factor since the All-Star break. Any help would be great.
I mean, Diaz isn't the Mets closer right now, so that seems like the easy choice. I think he will be again before the season's done, but Vasquez is fine. He just hasn't gotten many chances lately, and Giles has been hurt, so Diaz is the one I would drop.
I think that's a pretty easy choice there. Good stuff. That is all that we have for you. We will be back with you again tomorrow right here, Fantasy Baseball Today. Until then, later, everybody.